This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today, as usual, by
Leandro Nutty Lewis Nyo, but everybody calls me Unnutty!
And
Jeremy Cobb, but Russ Lusetsky calls me Corny.
Which I would say
it's a low-hanging fruit. It's a low-hanging fruit, though.
If there's one thing that Jeremy isn't, I'd say generally you're not a corny guy, you know? You don't go for those cheesy one-liners or...
No, but it's just such a good classic.
My jokes are many things, but I don't know if corny is one. That said, I do enjoy eating corn, so I guess in that sense...
You are a little corny.
Yeah.
They're a little corny.
I'm a little corny.
I'm a little corny.
You know me, I'm just a little corny.
Hey, Lil Corny, how you doing?
Yeah, Lil Corny. There should definitely be a rapper named Lil Corny.
Lil Corny. Oh, no. But when you drop that album, Jerry, when we become an international success and you drop that album, you can do Lil Corny.
It would be my unicorn rapper persona. I like wear a unicorn onesie.
Hey, y'all, I'm Lil Corny.
But you're like sat out in the rain. Like, do you know what I mean? Like the Moody album cover, like, it's like you and a unicorn onesie looking down.
But I have the anime eyes.
Yeah.
Oh.
I wish everyone at home could see what I'm seeing right now. Jeremy's doing full anime eyes. It's adorable.
Yes, it's true. Adorable. I have seen someone about it. My eyes aren't, most people's eyes can't get this big. But yeah, it's a gift in some cases.
Oh my God.
Wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full prince vibe? Woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No.
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
So, halflings, how are you doing? Actually, how are you guys? I feel like I haven't asked you guys here. Like, we always chat about how we're doing, but, like, how's everyone feeling? How's it going?
My mom is out of town, so I'm feeding her birds for her. She has a lot of... She doesn't own birds. She has a bird feeder outside. And despite the fact that it never really mattered to her prior to this, she now feels a real burden to continue supplying these birds
with food.
A real
burden?
Oh,
the real
wow.
Bird.
Wow, talk about low-hanging fruit. Today, we're going for it.
Jasper William Cornwright.
Yeah, I got my first nickname.
Yes.
Yes.
You got to start doing them now.
Oh, God. It'll be endless. The intros to these shows will be endless if we all start getting nicknames.
My mom, her
bird feeder at times gets 30 plus birds at a time.
Ooh. Oh,
it is the most, it is the busiest bird feeder I've ever seen. There's like an entire flock of mourning doves that just comes down. They post out on all of the telephone wires, just watching for a few minutes. And then like after a while, they just descend upon it. And the deck is covered in these mourning doves. We have like 4 or 5 different male cardinals, plus a bunch of different female cardinals. We just keep getting more and more squirrels that come and they fight each other. Over seeds and stuff.
Squirrel Fight Club. Jeremy's house is Squirrel Fight Club.
But more members keep showing up, so clearly they're breaking the first rule of Squirrel Fight Club, which is don't chitter about Squirrel Fight Club.
Well, you're gonna look out there one day, Jeremy, and see like a tiny little like squirrel-sized white van pull up, and then the bird feeder's just gonna get blown up.
There's one squirrel that's out there, like, apparently just chittering at itself.
Yeah.
And no one's sure what's happening.
And then you can just see one squirrel just glitching out. Like, it's almost like they're in one frame and then they just sort of disappear
from
view.
Yeah, there's a squirrel for a second and it's gone.
Yeah, just a squirrel for a second and then disappears.
Squirrel looks really handsome.
Yeah, really handsome and buff. Wow.
Yeah.
Brad Squirrel. Cool. So this week we thought we would discuss all things Session Zero. Before we do, we thought we would share what was quite a hilarious tale from the table, wouldn't you say, Jeremy?
I would say this is probably the wildest tale from the table that I've ever had. Certainly as a player. I don't know if it's for all my games, but it's up there, man.
Yeah. So the campaign that I've been running for the longest amount of time may have just got a little derailed by my own foolishness. But, like, I mean, Jeremy, do you want to tell this from your perspective, how this went down?
Yeah.
It was pretty entertaining.
Okay, so at this point in the story of this campaign, we were kind of, it was like a climax of sorts for my character's arc up to that point. We had remade contact. My character is named Dennis Colespring. He's a Ghostwise halfling. His clan is called the Wu-Tang Clan. And we had just returned to help get the Wu-Tang Clan to move because there was a massive Imperial army heading for that stretch of forest. And it was like an army ant situation. They weren't there for us, but if we were in their way, they would annihilate us.
Yes.
And we went on this whole quest to try and save Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five so that we could then convince the rest of the clan to move. We finally did it. We're on our way. We're like, we have to go. We find out that this army is even bigger than we had thought it was going to be, and it's going to ravage this entire area. So we're like, look, maybe our best bet is to actually just go to the army and ask them to just not kill us. And so we're on our way there. We got our whole plan worked out. On our way, we pass this mysterious hut, and I don't remember who rolled high enough, but essentially we ascertained that this was some kind of hag's hut.
Yes.
And the hag inside started speaking to us telepathically, trying to entice us to come closer to the hut. And I was all prepared to just move on, but one of the other characters suggested, hey, now, wait a minute, we're going to negotiate with an exceptionally powerful man. If negotiations go...
An archmage, in fact.
Yes, and if negotiations go south, we can use all the help we could get. So why don't we see if we can convince this hag to come with us, and maybe if we have to use our fallback plan, she can, you know, help save the day. And I was like, yeah, okay, why not? So she was like, I'll help you on one condition. One of you has to come in and draw from my deck of cards. And now everyone who was playing knew what she was talking about. But even so, our characters could tell just by the way that she framed it that it was like, you know, maybe we shouldn't do this. And luckily, yes. I'd become acting grandmaster of the Wu-Tang Clan recently. And so I had sent in my rival, my arch rival within the Wu-Tang Clan, Blue Jay-Z, to draw a card. Blue Jay-Z goes in. I roll a D20 to see what card he draws. I don't remember the name of the card that he draws.
I believe it was called the Fates.
Do you want to read what it is, Jasper, once you get it up?
So you pulled the card, the Fates. The reality's fabric unravels and spins anew, allowing you to avoid or erase one event as if it never happened. You can use this card's magic as soon as you draw the card or at any other time before you die. Jeremy, I'll just take this a little bit. Jeremy sent in his arch rival, who was the sort of stand-in grandmaster whilst Grandmaster Flash was incapacitated. And so when he drew this card, he went, well, I just don't want him to be, like, I don't want him to be the grandmaster anymore. I would have got this if it wasn't for him. Fortunately for Dennis, he didn't just wish that Dennis had never been born, which would have been pretty chaotic.
Yeah.
Would have been worse. And so basically he wished, or he sort of said, well, Dennis never got his hat back, which means he would still be kind of a disgraced member of the Wu-Tang Clan, and kind of walked back the whole first arc for Dennis's character, like many, many, many hours of playing led us to very recently Dennis finally getting his hat back, and it is now right back where they found it because the guy who had it refused to give it to them.
And so suddenly, not only is Dennis like, oh, I'm not Grandmaster, and it's like Dennis has no memory of ever being Grandmaster.
Yeah, because just suddenly reality just changes. That's just the new timeline you're on.
Yeah,
basically.
Blue Jay Z did a full on Marvin Berry Back to the Future scenario and took Dennis's plan that he had come up with and is now pretending that it's his plan to go do all this stuff. And on top of that, Dennis's love interest, Bill Bonce, is suddenly there with Blue Jay Z in a full blown relationship.
Yep.
And she won't give Dennis the time of day.
She said she won't even look at him.
Yeah. And so Dennis is like suddenly just real sad and he doesn't know why. And Blue Jay Z is being really mean to him and nobody's sure why. And like we continued with our journey, but Dennis is immediately like, whoa. And the hag comes out and she's like, she joins with us and she turns to Dennis. She's like, hey, I got some cards if you want to pull a card. And so I, as a player, imposed a wisdom saving throw mechanic whereby Dennis was trying to resist the urge to draw a card from this deck. And I kept rolling so high on
literally
these.
Nat 20s. Like you rolled several nat 20s to save. Universe was saying, don't draw a card!
Enough with the cards!
It was, because every single time a new insult would occur, Dennis would be like looking over the card deck just like...
And I, as the DM, was just layering these insults in as much as I could. Like any opportunity I could to needle Dennis, I was like, yep, I'm gonna take this.
We arrive outside the enemy camp. We... announce that we're there. They go in to get the High Arbiter? Is that?
Yes, the Prime Arbiter.
The Prime Arbiter. Yeah, this Archmage. They go in to go get him, and we're waiting outside the camp. Bill Bonce and Blue Jay Z disappear, and then we hear just a rhythmic pounding sound. At which point, Dennis is finally like, okay. Nope. He turns to the hag, whose name is Ashanai, and is like, Ashanai, I have a question. If I draw a card, can I draw it for someone else? And she was like, sure, but you just need an item belonging to that person, and I'll allow it. And so Dennis, because he keeps saving all of these throws, and because he knows something went down in the hut, because the team's Sherlock Holmes cat, Wild Spark, he's Sherlock Holmes, but he's a cat, was able to tell. He's like, something happened in that hut. I'm not sure what happened, but something is different. Dennis is finally like, okay, you know what? I'm going to be a somewhat bigger man, and rather than go after Blue Jay Z, he sends the NPC rogue that's been accompanying the party into the enemy camp to steal an item of the Prime Arbiter's.
And I just want to point this out. So when I ruled that this could happen, in my head as a DM, this was the folly I had as a DM, where I was like, this is going to be so hard. This is a freaking Archmage. You can't just sneak up on the Archmage. You can't just be going in there taking stuff. So this is going to be so hard. Someone's going to get caught. Blah, 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 blah. They sent the rogue in, this NPC rogue. They Dennis cast Pass Without a Trace. He also got Bardic Inspiration. The NPC rogue rolled a 43 for stealth. 43! The NPC rogue came back with the motherfucker's coat that he was wearing.
It was truly, and I think he rolled a natural 14 and still
got
14
and got a 43. Yeah, it was ridiculous because he rolled like an 8 on the Bardic Inspiration and
and he gets like a plus 14, I think, to stealth as well. Mm-hmm. It's broken, absolutely broken. So we. I then like go to Ashanai and I'm like, okay, here's the deal that I'm willing to offer you. I will draw two cards from this deck. One card for me and one card for the Prime Arbiter. And I get to choose who gets which card. And Jasper had me roll a persuasion check.
It was a high DC. High DC.
I roll a natural 18. Which I got a plus 2 to persuasion, which gives me a dirty 20, plus the bard inspired me, so that jumped up to a 24. And she, on her insight check to oppose me, rolled a natural 1.
Yep.
Meaning that she then says, okay, I'll let you do it, but I just won't tell you what the card does. I'll only tell you the name of the card.
And then, if I may, Jeremy, just to describe my journey through this next bit, Jeremy rolls twice, picks two cards out, and I was thinking, well, this is good, because they'll just have the name of the card, so they won't be able to tell whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. The two cards that were drawn, right, was Knight, spelt like K-N-I-G-H-T, so as in like a knight, and The Void. Like, it couldn't have been much more clear cut which one was good and which one was bad if you tried.
Yeah.
If you tried. So my heart, I'm like, okay, cool. It was at which point I realized the Prime Arbiter is quite literally the second, maybe third, big bad in my campaign. Like, so much planning, precise planning has gone into this specific character. And then for those of you who don't know what the Void card does, let me just read this out for you. The Void. This black card spells disaster. Your soul is drawn from your body and contained within an object in a place of the DM's choice. One or more powerful beings guard this place. Whilst your soul is trapped this way, your body is incapacitated. A wish spell cannot restore your soul. But a wish spell can reveal the location of the object that holds you. So my main bad guy just
I as a DM I've dealt with this card deck before. And so when he says the knight, I'm like, oh,
the Void,
boy.
You mean the void.
No, I even knew what the knight was. Yeah, when you said the knight, I was like, oh boy. And then when you said the Void, I was just like,
there was like a point of me where I was like, well, look, I'm going to make him roll intelligence checks. If it's two things that are close, but you as players know what it is, I'll make you roll intelligence checks to see if you're like the characters would get it. But I was like, there's not a hard choice between the worst case scenario, the knight's going to pop up and try and kill you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's still a lot better than the Void.
Yeah. And so Dennis was like, yeah, man, I'm giving him the Void. I'll take the knight.
We had like a full hour left of that session. I was like, guys, I'm going to have to pump the brakes here because I need to go and have a think.
I don't think I've ever laughed harder during a D&D game. Like, the entire group was just in utter shambles. Jasper was a broken man.
I was literally just doing a 50-yard stare for the rest of the Zoom, just like, what the fuck do I do? This has broken my campaign.
I could hear Sound of Silence playing whenever I looked at Jasper.
It was so bad, but it was such a particular set of circumstances. Not only that, but the only reason the hag was there was for a player who wasn't there. He couldn't make the session. So none of this would have happened if that player had just been there. Because the hag wasn't there for Dennis. The hag was there for a different player. Man. It's so ridiculous. But
we have to say who the knight. What happened with the knight?
Oh yeah, So
can you read what the knight card says?
Yes, I will read what the knight card says. Know. So, you gain as the service of a fourth level fighter who appears in a space you choose within 30 feet of you. The fighter is the same race as you and serves only you loyally until death. Believing the fates have drawn him or her to you, you control this character.
Yep. And so that is how Hard Won Surefoot,
another D&D podcast.
Yes, the Rune Knight fighter, Ghostwise Halfling, just showed up in our campaign.
I mean, look, hey, we're on the same podcasting network as Jake Hurwitz now. I could maybe drop him an email and just say, hey, do you fancy guesting on my home game? Like, you're in it, so.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to guest?
That would be truly amazing.
They now have another party member in Harbon Shorefoot. And my main bad is in a friggin' black void somewhere.
Yep.
If you don't know who Hard Won Surefoot is, you should definitely check out Not Another D&D podcast.
You should,
it's
indeed.
It's a really, really great podcast.
Yes.
Really awesome.
Well, that's our tale from the table. Absolutely ridiculous. I'm a little bit annoyed at you, Unati. I feel like if you were there, you wouldn't have stood for these shenanigans and you probably would have stopped them.
I would have not been anywhere near.
Exactly. You'd have just been like, Yeah.
No.
No.
No. Let's go.
You just packaged Dennis up and said, you're not drawing a card, let's go.
Let's
like,
go.
That's what would have happened.
Let's go.
And thus saved the campaign.
And thus saved the campaign. So thanks a lot, you know, see. Thanks
a lot.
Sorry.
It is kind of my vengeance. It's my vengeance for Strahd, you know what I mean? It's okay.
Yeah.
Karma for Strahd.
Let that be a lesson to you, DMs. The deck of many things is a real risk.
Literally, my players the other day when they'd gone to Majaji, the Rain Queen's cave, and we were like debating like what sort of magic item they would receive or like what we could do in that point, because I was like stuck because they'd done something that I really wasn't expecting. And then they suggested a deck of many things, and I looked at them and I said, not a fucking chance.
Nope.
not a fucking chance.
Quite literally, I don't think I could make one piece of advice clearer for DMs. Whatever you do, do not make the deck of many things available on anywhere near regular or permanent basis. Do not give them a deck of many things. Do not let them anywhere near that, because it is ridiculous. You will derail your campaign in a session. Like, that was drawing three cards. The entire campaign changed on a dime twice because of three cards. There are worse and more game-breaking cards that can be drawn even than those ones. Mm-hmm. Just do not give your players a deck of many things.
They were looking at me laughing. They were like, let's get some chaos. I'm like, no.
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 Not that much. Not that much.
Chaos.
Don't do that to yourself.
Chaos control.
And speaking of DM advice, we thought that we would do a little deep dive on a session zero. Maybe how you avoid awkward conversations about why your players can't have a deck of many things in the future, because you can cover that in a session zero. You can say, just so you know, I'm going to put it out there now, no deck of many things, don't even mention it at my table. Thank you.
If you mention it, your character instantly dies.
Yes.
If you literally suffers the effect of every card.
If you say deck of and then you're followed by many things, instant death.
Yeah.
That is it. You're done. You're done. But no, we thought this is something that we have actually had quite a lot of conversation around on our Discord. There's been some really, really fantastic conversation on our Discord, so big shout out to everyone there. I believe Remco actually brought it up as well. We did a halfling hangout, which is where we get to chill with some of our patrons, and we had a little discussion there as well. And it just seems to be something that's floating around a lot at the moment. And I saw someone saying, you know, like, why isn't, like, Wizards of the Coast, for instance, release, like, a little, like, how-to on Session Zeros and things like that. And it's just quite an interesting conversation. And, there's some weird conflicting things that I found doing a bit of research on it. And so I thought it'd be a really good thing for us to just have a little dig into and talk about. So I guess, first of all, overview. What's, like, for you two, what would you say is, like, what would you be wanting to nail in a Session Zero?
Safety tools,
mm-hmm.
lines and veils, and then like game expectation, like what the players are kind of looking for, because I might not be the right DM for them. That's fair enough. And they might not be the right party for me, because that's not the kind of game I want to run. You see what I mean? It's got to be fun.
Sure.
So like we just kind of sort of check that. Those are like the three main things I really want to cover. Then for like super newbie players, I'll like look at combat. What that means, and then try and bring the party together in terms of like their characters, if that's covered, and then just like how we're going to deal with players being unavailable. How are we going to are we going to keep going? Do we autopilot a character? Do we not autopilot the character? Just little things like that, like house maintenance, and that's usually what I'll kind of do. And then also like really stress to my players that if at any point something does become a line, or you know, just email me. And you don't have to explain yourself, just be like, nope, not a fan, and then it's gone, like it never happened.
Gone. Just poof.
And that's pretty much like, I mean, that's in a nutshell, but that's pretty much
what I
try to
We're just looking
hit.
For a little overview. Nice.
I would say pretty much the same things. I think I ran a session zero for the first time for the campaign that I'm currently running that Unati is in. And I think for that session zero, we discussed safety tools, lines and veils. We talked about, we had already decided on the setting itself, because we had talked about that prior. which I think is probably for the best. I don't know if, I mean, you can try and discuss that at the table, but I wanted, this was like a character creation session as well. So I had everybody come with multiple character ideas. Mm. Was that the same session, Unati, or was that, were those two different sessions?
I think it was two different sessions, wasn't it?
Oh, okay.
And then you sort of also like spent some time with us individually as well.
Yeah, but I think the initial choosing of the characters.
Oh yeah, that was all done together. I think.
That was another thing that we did. I don't remember if it was the same session, but it was also kind of a session zero in which everybody brought three character ideas.
Oh, that's very
And then the group kind of would help people decide which, it would be like, which character would you most want to play? And then some other people might have input on like whether they like which of the person's three characters they think would really fit. And I would be able to be like, yeah, if you have this, then this person has this and this person has this, then it fits. Whereas you guys, if you have the same idea roughly, then it's kind of like, oh, I don't know how this person's going to fit in there. And also, that kind of stuff.
Each of us all had one dark, broody film noir character. And if we all had just brought that one, it'd be an entire party of dark, broody film noir characters.
Every woman in the campaign brought in a character that whose entire like backstory was killing men, which is really interesting as well. I was just like, "This is okay."
Unresolved trauma.
A lot of feelings here. We can maybe talk about this later. I don't know if we need three of these.
Let me just look at my lines and veils spreadsheet for a second.
The man death campaign.
Yeah.
I don't know
if this
campaign
is the way we want to go.
I think mine's the same. I like what you said there, Jeremy. Like it's been a while since I've had the need to do a session zero. I kind of run two main campaigns at the moment, and they're sort of have been going for some time now. But I feel like the next one I do, I think part of it for me would be a slightly, I think, so here's what I would say is I feel like there is an option to go very like mechanical heavy, and there's like narrative heavy, as well as obviously like the sort of safety tools elements. And I feel like I like the idea of making it quite like narrative heavy and giving the players an opportunity to kind of like tweak their characters a little bit and see maybe if two characters fit together. And like, I quite like the idea of them being like having a bit of a pre-relationship, you know, before they get into the story, or like two characters maybe have met each other before. And, you know, and like, I feel like that's the sort of thing that you could potentially establish in a very like creative and fun kind of space. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like that's quite fun. But yeah, why don't we just go through, I've got a little list here of things that sort of could be included in session zero. And
Because I'm going to start running a little short like campaign for my housemates. And one of the things that I've like put in to do in my session zero is have them tell me what sort of stories they like. Like, what are they looking for? Because they've never played D&D before. So I could, like, throw a whole bunch of Forgotten Realms stuff at them, and then they absolutely loathe it. I kind of like this kind of stuff, and this intrigues me about fantasy or sci-fi or whatever. And then I can go, oh, can that fit in mechanically into D&D? Okay, cool. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's the other thing that you can do.
That's very cool. These are just like little things that are on this a particular list of like things that you could include. This is just on like a Reddit list of just detailed list of like things that you could cover, and not say you should cover them all or that you must cover them all sort of thing, but just as an idea. And I think it covers pretty much everything you could put in a session zero. Mm-hmm. So, and this is one of the things for me that I think potentially might not, and I'd be interested to get your takes on it, because obviously you've said that you want to do, you know, like lines and veils and things like that. And I believe it was Kelsey, one of our patrons, actually, who suggested this. And I think this is a really, really great idea, which is actually setting up a like Google, like a spreadsheet or type thing where basically you can vote anonymously on like certain things and like kind of basically edit it anonymously to basically put in what things you do you wouldn't be comfortable covering, what things you know are okay with. And basically the reason I say this is because I think it is important that you don't all get around a table and start asking people about their trauma. I don't think that's a particularly useful thing. I think that's probably only going to cause more harm than good in the long run. And I don't think you should ever really be asking anyone to justify why they don't, like, that should never be You know, that there's no need for someone to justify why they don't want to talk about something or why they don't like a particular subject. Mm. Obviously, if like the line is like, absolutely no violence, and like, you know what I mean, then maybe we should think about a different game. Like,
maybe
you know what I mean?
Playing D&D.
Yeah, like, yeah. For sure. But I think I
did
like
the
idea.
Did you think that the Dungeons of the Dragons were just like, you just went down there and hung out in the dungeon just, with the dragon?
Yeah, yeah. And it's just charisma checks the whole time. That's all it is.
I mean, it could be an interesting campaign, but really hard to run.
Really hard to run.
Yeah,
really,
you're going to be leaving out a whole lot
of the mechanics of the game.
It'd be a quicker game for sure. D&D would be a quicker game if you didn't have any combat to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
But no, this is, and I don't know what you guys feel, but I think that I would say to my players, either tell me before session zero, or like set up a place where people can say things anonymously, like of things that they don't find comfortable talking about, because especially as what tends to happen is like not everyone knows each other in a group. When you first start, like, it usually tends to be like a bit of a group of like a collection of friends, maybe that all knows the DM or knows one of the players or something like that. And so therefore, like, I just don't feel like I would be comfortable airing any like particular stuff in that kind of scenario. And I feel like you're only likely to make a situation that you're literally trying to avoid with the session zero. Do you know what I mean? So I think it would be more about explaining the way the mechanics of Lines and Veils works as opposed to actually talking about like what they'll specifically be used on. Yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, so I suppose for me with Lions and Veils, what I will tend to do is, just because of like the nature of like how I am, is I'll start. Like, I won't go, Lions and Veils, go. I'll go, Lions and Veils, here are mine, to kind of go, I'm willing to talk about that. And then I also really much stress that you don't have to say anything. No one's going to look at you funny if you don't say anything. If you want to email me about something, or if you just want to rest on the safety of the safety tools. If you just want to, like, you know, X card or red, green, yellow, like, that's fine. And we'll never have to explain anything. Those are all of the options available to you. If I stumble into anything that I don't know about, because that is very possible when you're trying to create a safe space for people and making sure that people aren't necessarily, like we said, airing their stuff in a place that might be unusual to them, then the safety tools are there for that, but also feel free to just come and be like, yo, that particular part in game that freaked me out, can that never happen again?
Yeah. Great. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's fine.
I would definitely second Unati's statement about the DM establishing some lines first, because I think it makes, not only does it break the tension, but it also makes it clear to the players that the DM has concerns already.
Sure.
For things that they're not going to cover. So it, I think, creates a greater sense of security as well. If the DM just flat out addresses, because there are certain topics that are usually just, for most people, not going to be something that they don't want in a game. And so if the DM goes out and officially says, this, I don't want in my game. And it's like, even if it's those topics, people, I think, might internally go like, whew, okay, good.
This isn't something crazy. I don't have to bring it up. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, then I would merge that with what Jasper had, I think, read about establishing a like a private place where people can respond anonymously.
Yeah, it was actually just Kelsey, one of our patrons, who suggested this.
Okay, Kelsey. Thank you, Kelsey. That's a really good idea to merge in there, where it's like, you can either say it now, or you can contact me privately, or you guys can put it up here.
Drop it there. Yeah. And then it's it's like anonymously done. It's there in black and white, and it's very clear, I think.
Yeah. Jasper, how do those anonymous things function? Where do you find them?
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I think it's actually just like a Google, because basically on when you were on when you share a document on Google, like Word or an Excel spreadsheet or something like that, you can basically set it up with like, you know, little tick boxes and things you can put in, or people can add notes. But when someone else jumps in who has the link, they just come up as like anonymous squirrel or something. Like it doesn't tell you what the email or the name of the person who's on the sheet is or what edits they made, if that makes sense. So it's a very easy way to just be totally anonymous and put things on there, which is nice.
Thank you, Google, she says reluctantly.
The first time
Google
ever.
Google hears you and it smiles.
Yeah. So other little things that I've just listed here for things that you could potentially cover, which is things like drinking, I guess, because that's absolutely something that some players will be totally comfortable with, other people won't be comfortable with.
Like drinking at the table, you
mean? Yeah, drinking at the table, like narcotics, anything like that, just generally, it's definitely good to air that out. That's
table.
What it says on the here. I was like,
bro,
people are really
cutting lines. Shoot up during games.
I was like, there's a line of what I think they're even just considering here. Like, there's certain things I'm like, surely that's just, we're not going to be able to function. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to function at the table if.
Like a bag of cocaine. I'm just like, and then like something like goes to the microwave and he's like, I'm really confused.
Goes to the microwave. Moving on.
This is like an 80s, Hollywood D&D.
Moving on. Cell phones and digital devices. That's, that you know, again, worth clearing up, because I know that there's some players I have are really like, no, I want to be like in the thing, and there's other players that are like, hey, 3 hours is a long time for me to sit still, and I will pay more attention if I can just like, you know, fiddle around with my phone or doodle or whatever. And I would say with all of these things I'm about to say as well, like as a DM, try to be as open as you can. Like, I understand that it might be a little bit infuriating if one of your players likes being on their phone, but like if that's the way that they feel comfortable at a table, or if that's where they can stay focused for 3 hours, then like try and give them some leeway. Obviously, if they're sat there like blaring music or like phoning their friends or whatever, then there's obviously a line, but try and be open, I think, to these things. Obviously, DMs, I understand you do a difficult job, so, you know, try and set the table up as much as suits you, but I just think it's good to be receptive to players as well. So, topics, unannounced dice rolls. This is a big one that is just good to clarify. Just like, if I have not told you to roll a dice, do not roll dice. Like, you can't just be like, hey, I rolled a nat 20 on a perception check. Like, what for?
Do you mean?
I didn't. No. Well,
yeah,
it's investigation, so roll again. Like, that's what I would do as a DM in that scenario.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Yeah. But just again, like, it's about establishing these little things so that, like, as a player, you don't end up accidentally doing something that's going to annoy the DM or going to, you know, infringe upon the experience for other people. And as a DM, you're like, well, cool. I feel like it's almost like it gives the DM a little bit more, like, agency to just be like, hey, man, we already agreed this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it can be a little bit iffy. And it's happened a few times where, like, generally, if, like, I interpret a rule differently to like how another DM does, and it can get a little bit like icky when a player's like, but what? But why can't that happen? And I'm like, well, that's just not how I read that rule. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think the things like establishing things like this is like, oh, very easily like, hey, we agreed this before we started. So, you know?
Yeah.
Take it out with former you who didn't say anything at the time.
Yeah.
Also like cocked rolls as well. Like, or like the it rolled on the floor thing. I'm like, tell me what that dice roll was. Did you roll a one on the floor? Did you roll a one on the floor? It's a one.
I think Satine Phoenix says that if it rolls off of the table, you take damage. Which is like, wow. That's rough.
Wow. That's a crazy.
If people don't own dice trays, that's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is. I feel like if I enforce that rule, I'd have to buy my players dice trays. I'd feel too bad to enforce that rule without a dice tray.
And everybody's like at home and has less than ideal setups, and they're trying to roll, and they're like, oh, it fell on the floor. Oh, okay.
Oh,
you're trying to roll a death save.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, you roll a death save, you take damage and just die.
No.
It's like this. This feels wrong. This feels wrong. But, you know, if it's what you're doing at your table and everybody's cool with it.
Yeah, then you know.
It is what it is.
And, you know, much in the same way that the D&D is set up, like, these rules are made to be broken. If you find something that's more fun for you and your group of friends, then do that. Like, you know, that's totally fine. We've kind of covered this one, player expectations, player discomfort. If you are wanting to find out more about safety tools, etc., we do have a whole episode on it, which you can go and listen to. There are also a plethora of resources online which you can find out about safety tools as well. So we won't cover that too much in this episode, but definitely find yourself some, find some that work for you, and use those, because it will really help.
It definitely helps.
Player agency. This is kind of like a big one. And I'll throw out to you, Jeremy, because this is a big one for me that, like, I, since listening to NADPOD, actually, it's one of the first times where I've really gone like, oh, there is a very different setup here in terms of player agency versus, like, most games I've come into contact with. And I quite liked it, but I was like, that's something you definitely probably want to establish ahead of time. And for a context, what it is that on NADPOD, like, they have a, because it's kind of like a comedy podcast, or like, I guess, a comedy D&D game, a lot of the times the players will sort of, they'll riff about something and make it up, and then Murph, the DM, will just like slide that into the lore of the world, mm-hmm. and do you know what I mean? It will become like a part of the thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the jokes, you know, I guess it's kind of like the rule of funny as opposed to the rule of cool.
Yeah.
But how do you establish that? Would you establish that?
I think in that case, all of those people are trained and very experienced improvisers.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so it makes sense to let them do stuff like that, because it's like, you know that it, for one thing, it's going to be really entertaining. And then you also know it's probably not going to be something that is just like, why have you done this?
Yeah.
So if you trust the players or player or whatever, and because I know a lot of my games, people wouldn't even... like, they wouldn't even feel comfortable trying to do it.
Sure, sure.
Like, a lot of the people that I play with, they just are not improvisers. So they wouldn't... yeah, like, it's sometimes, like, pulling teeth to get creation stuff out of them in terms, like, in when I'm DMing for them. So I would say it is definitely something that's worth discussing up front, because if you think that's going to be a facet of the game, then it's worth bringing up, because some players, I think, would really like to be able to jump in there. But to also, to some degree, it can be like, it can be one of those like BS things where it's like, oh, but I happen to have.
Oh, yeah.
And, like,
no,
you just
I mean,
pull
like,
out a thing and it's like, what?
Yeah, I definitely think like when it's in that scenario, it's like, if you want to pull out like a common ass item, like for the funny, that's like, do you know what I mean? I would say like, that's fine. Do you know what I mean? You can't be pulling out legendary things.
Yeah. Or like, no. I've had a cell phone this whole time.
Yeah. Well, no, like, you don't think you did.
No,
you didn't.
No, you haven't.
I'm actually very wealthy.
Yeah. An eagle swoops down and snatches the cell phone and the money out of your hands. I'm so sorry.
You are immediately robbed.
Yeah. But, like, also, I think, as well, like, little things that, like, we do, like, where you have, like, a full business, do you know what I mean, within the world. Like, I feel like things like that is good to sort of say, like, hey, look, if you guys can justify it, if you guys are willing to kind of, like, go with me on that journey, then I'm willing to let you do as much as... you know, and have as much of an effect on this world as you would like, you know?
Yeah, like the... because for me, in most campaigns, unless my character has specific stakes and is really tied in with what's actually happening, most of the time, the most interesting part of the campaign for me is just interacting with the world and doing whatever I want in the world. Because... yeah. If it's just like, oh, this is some quest that you're being sent on, but I don't know the person who's sending it me on it, and honestly, I don't really care about what I'm going to get, then I start to get bored. And I'm like, yeah, sure, we could go do get into some fun combats and explore some cool areas and stuff. But, like, it's harder to keep my interest because I'm not emotionally invested. So for me, but that's, like, a conversation that needs to be had, because for me, I'll be like, oh, I want to go try and reform this. Like, I want to try and build a whole business empire. I want to have a merchandising line now. It's like, well, I'm sorry, this is a Wendy's, but as long as the Wendy's is okay with you showing up with a merchandising line, then yeah, okay. Why not? Yeah. Go for it.
Fine.
So that might be something worth discussing as well.
Yeah.
The degree of player in terms of player agency, how far outside of the bounds of the established quest can the players go?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. rules debate, I feel like that's generally straightforward. Like, DM says that's what happens. Like, unless it's like something ridiculous or just against the wording of something that you have written down. Like, if you're trying, like, I feel like it's always good as a player to be like, look, DM, I know this is shithousery, so if you want to say no, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's a good way to placate a DM if you ever want to try and get away with something that is nonsense. You know?
Also, if you, I think if you establish, if like, if you can find where it says the rule somewhere, then you might be able to, or if it's just like, no, I don't care what the rules say, we're doing this.
Yeah.
Like that needs to be established, I think, up front. Yes. So you don't have players being like, but on here it says that I, and also, by the way, DMs, if you're going to do, if you're going to say my word is law, no matter what the rules say, this is what happens, then you should probably establish what rules you may have changed ahead of time.
So you don't
end up in a situation where your player is like, okay, so I walk 10 feet, I cast a spell, then I walk another 20 feet, then I use my bonus action, and then I walk, and you know, and then I walk, well, not another 20 feet, but like I walk 10 feet, I walk another 5 feet, use my bonus action, then I walk another 15 feet. That you, and then the DM's like, oh no, sorry, you can only use your movement action at all at a time. You cannot split up your movement.
Yeah.
That's not in the rules.
But
you need to establish, you need to establish that ahead of time with your players.
Yeah,
so they don't, they're not sitting there like, oh, okay, cool, great. Well, like, and I would say anything along the way. I remember in a game one time, I was playing an artificer, and artificers get infusions, and one of the infusions that you can create is you create an existing, you reproduce a magic item that exists.
Huh.
And so I'm like, oh, dude, well, we've been looking for bags of holding this whole campaign.
Yeah, I'm
going to get a bag of holding. And so during the campaign, I was like, okay, cool. He's like, what are your infusions? I was like, okay, so I'm going to create a magic item. And I'd spent a long time looking at what the different things were. And he was like, okay, cool. What magic item? I was like, I'm gonna make a bag of holding. He's like, okay, that's a no. And I was like, what? He's like, no. I was like, so I can't make, but it's one of the options. Yeah, but no.
Oh,
yeah.
That's annoying.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay. Could you maybe next time just let me know in advance
of what
before
I
show up with
do.
A whole series of plans based on this bag of holding? It was one of those things where I was just like, why?
Yeah.
But if that's you, let your players know in advance, because that was not a good feeling for me. I was like, oh, I just wasted a bunch of time, had all this emotional and psychological energy. I was all excited for this.
Yeah.
Had a whole plan.
And I think that actually raises like a generally good point, which I think you could absolutely cover in the session zero as well, which is like, it sucks to roll badly as a player. Like, as a DM, I don't really get what it really means as much. Do you know what I mean? Like, generally, you're like, meh, I hit or I don't hit. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I got a lot to think about, you know? Whereas for a player, like, you spend what could be like 10 minutes sitting there being like, this is what I'm going to do on my move and then my turn. Okay, this, I've got this, and this spell's going to go with this. And then if I do like a backflip off of there, and then yes, and I can get to them, and I'm going to save them all. And then like you roll a one, like that really stings. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like as a DM, like, and you can definitely try and establish this earlier, but like be on your player's side. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless they want something that's going to like break them and be really, really hard.
Yeah.
Like just be nice.
Yeah.
Be nice
or
to your
players.
Or
unless that's the game you guys really want to play.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If that's the game
you
want to play.
Really adversarial.
Yeah.
I wanted to throw out there homebrew rules that
yes.
is tying in with this.
Yes.
It's good to establish what the homebrew rules are ahead of time, because I remember I saw recently a person that I knew posted saying that they had rolled two consecutive natural ones and had completely, like, their equipment had all broken.
Whoa.
And like, that's like, wow. And it was like during a fight. They were just rolling to like attack and their equipment is now ruined.
Oh,
and it's
man.
Like, this is like,
that's heavy. That's a heavy
harsh.
Punishment. That's a heavy punishment. I mean, admittedly, if like someone rolled like three ones in a row in my campaign, like a black hole might open up and just eat the world or something. But like, you know.
But you need to establish this ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because in the rules, natural one only refers to, like, it really only applies rules as written, to attack rolls. And all it means is that you just automatically miss.
Yes.
Whereas natural 20s also only apply to attack rolls. Oh, excuse me. They also apply to death saves. Those are the, like, a natural one counts as two death saves. A natural 20 brings you back up with one HP. Mm-hmm. Natural 20 on attack roll is a critical hit. You automatically hit and you roll double the dice. Now, if you are going to change that, say, a lot of people will have natural 20s apply to skill checks or saving throws. I've played in a game where the DM said if somebody rolls a natural 20 on a save, the spell, no matter what the language of the spell is, just doesn't affect them.
Wow.
Which I never liked because I'm like, if I'm a rogue, I have evasion as an ability. You've just completely cheapened one of my keystone abilities at level 7.
That was something I was going
to
bring up.
But that's something to establish.
Yeah, that was something I was going to bring up, which is like, I have a bit of a rule whereby I say that like, if there is a feature of another class that you feel like really works for your character and really like is like a thing that you would like, that's something you could 100% establish in session 0, which is if there is not another player at the table playing that specific class, then like you can absolutely bring that forward and we can maybe look at you adding that feature instead of like a feat or an ability score or something like that. Because again, but I would never do that if there was like a rogue in the, do you know what I mean? I wouldn't let someone effectively use like
rogue
evasion
abilities
without, if there was another rogue, because it does, you're right, it cheapens someone else's experience, which you know,
not
you don't
it.
Want for sure. This one I thought was actually quite interesting, which is spotlight sharing. And I guess like the general thing here is just like a bit of an agreement between players and also the DM to say like, if two players are having like a really cool role play moment, everyone just take a seat. Do you know what I mean? Let it happen. If someone's monologuing, if the DM has got something prepared, just let the DM get through the thing. Like, you can do the cool thing afterwards. You can say, hey, during that speech, I did X, but just let them do their thing. DMs want their moment in the spotlight too sometimes.
Yeah.
And then also, I thought this one's been a bit of a niggle for me sometimes in my campaigns, which is like, if you're not in the scene, if you are not physically there, then just let the scene happen. Like, I feel like this tends to happen because I play with a lot of excitable actors who are like, and like want to jump in. And I'm like, no. The party is split up right now. You're over in the hotel or whatever. These guys are on the beach. They're having a thing on the beach. You guys shut the hell up.
Yeah, you're not there.
Like, and especially if you're going to shout rules out. Like, you are not there. Stop metagaming.
Major, minor.
Yeah, major, minor. Yeah. That's a nice little acting term. Know when you're in minor, know when you're in major.
And that's all good. Mm.
Is that a reference to music, like the kinds of keys that you can be playing in?
Well, it makes sense, technically, I suppose. But I don't necessarily think
so. Yeah,
I
actually
don't. But it does make sense.
What does it actually mean?
John Wright, around clowning, right? So when you're doing a clowning skit, you like one person is in major, the other person is in minor. So either like boss clown or sympathetic clown or... and you know when to hand over the power of the scene to the other person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so that, yeah, I don't think that would be as much of a music term, but that does work.
Yeah. It does work quite nicely. And so there's a lot of like mechanical stuff as well on this list in terms of things that you could go through to clarify. I think what Yunati said about DM style and then player absence, how that works, because that I feel like is probably one of the more difficult things I find, and that's one of the things where I'm annoyed we didn't set a precedent at the beginning. Do you know what I mean? Because I quickly realized that I don't like piloting players. I just find that like stuff gets missed. You know, the player doesn't really tend to be able to engage, you know, then in something that happens, and the story ends up being so different to what it would have been if that player had been there. Do you know what I mean?
That literally happened one time. There was a campaign that I couldn't be there for most of a session, and the DM was piloting my character. And when I came back, the DM, like I popped in and out, and the DM was having my character do something that had I been there, I just flat out wouldn't have thought to do.
Yeah.
And so he was like, oh, you're right in time. Here's the situation.
Roll this save.
And I looked, I was like about to leave, and I was like, oh, what's the situation? He described it to me. I was like, so we could just win, right? Like, why are we leaving? We could just win.
Yeah.
Right? And it's better because if these guys leave, they'll tell on us, right? Yeah. We want to kill all of them.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I guess.
I guess.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I'm going to shoot one of them.
Yeah.
And we ended up, and the one of the players afterwards was like, please never have him leave again. Like, what are you doing having him leaving?
Yeah.
And because here's the thing, as a DM, your idea of a player, or excuse me, of a character may be different than the yes. player's idea of that character.
Yeah, absolutely. Hell yeah. It's going to be absolutely different. You have no idea yes. what's going on in their heads. So I really don't like autopiloting people's characters.
And
I just don't do it.
Also, like, I just forget. Like, which I think actually probably is a good thing. Like, quite honestly, like, I'm kind of happy that I forget, because I'm like, I don't want to pilot your character, because I'm just going to do a disservice to this yeah. beautiful character that you've put all this time and effort and whatever into, and I'm going to come in as the DM, and like, it's like when you try and, you know, like, oh right, the ghost has possessed you, okay, and you look at the player's sheet and you're like, Jesus, there's so much information on here, I'll just stab them with a sword, and you start like, you know, as the DM you start making the wizard stab people with a sword. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because it's just too much going on in your head to be thinking like, what are the internal motivations of this character with all this backstory and all
that
this
actually happened to you, Jasper. I don't yep. I think where you yep. your character wasn't there for a session, and when you came back, everybody yep. was talking about how your character was
genocidal maniac, and I was like, sorry,
because the DM had conceived of this character in a way in which it was like, yes, if they've done it to you, you should do it to them, and
yeah.
blah 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 blah,
and like,
and that's not
quite literally the whole point of my character was like, I don't agree with my people on this particular thing. We were like nearly wiped out as a peoples, and so therefore I want to go out and find us a safe home where we don't have to get involved in these wars anymore. And in a session that I was not there, I became a genocidal maniac. I didn't return to that campaign.
it was very, very funny as a player, but I to this day feel bad for Jasper.
It was quite heartbreaking seeing these messages on the WhatsApp group, because I loved that character. It's still one of my favorite characters I've ever made. And I was just like, No, that's not how
you were making like joking like protests on the group, and I remember at the time being like,
This is cutting him deep.
Yeah, he means that.
I can hear this in his WhatsApps.
I could hear like the gritting of the teeth.
Yeah. the little like bing bing or whatever, like say you got a message sounded a bit more sad when I messaged. Bing
yeah. It's just one sound.
Yeah. amazing. So, yeah, and then I think generally the rest of the list, which is very, very lengthy, by the way, I may well put a link to this in the show notes, because it's a very kind of comprehensive list of things that it might just prompt you to think as a DM, like, oh, what is my rule for that?
Yeah.
And therefore, if it might be different, then you might go, oh, okay, cool, I might actually clarify with this with my players in a session zero.
Like his fear of snakes.
Like my fear of snakes. I should have talked about that in the session zero. And so, there'd be more snakes, though. There'd be more snakes. If Jeremy had known that, there'd be more snakes.
yes. It would depend on in what way it was like, I don't like snakes. If it's like, when I hear the word snake, I pass out in terror.
Yeah.
Then it's like, okay, well, yeah, maybe. But if Indiana Jones generally hates snakes, then I'm like, oh, good. Well, you fall into a pit of snakes.
Yeah.
No.
Honestly, that we should have discussed this before the show. Okay. I can't.
Oh, no.
No, I'm joking. That makes me feel woozy. I hate snakes so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm always like, hey, look, if you like snakes, that's cool. That's your thing. But please don't bring them anywhere near me. Thank you.
The snakes are so sad, Jasper. They wish you, they just want to be your friend.
Well,
sorry,
okay.
Mom.
Maybe they shouldn't have developed these eyes, these fangs. They shouldn't be slithering all sneaky like. They should just be walking around on legs like normal lizards. Lizards are like snakes.
Yeah.
What about legless lizards?
Does it still? Does it?
It has to slither, yeah, because it doesn't have any legs. Well, it has like tiny little nubs, but it can't.
That's fine. Nubs is fine.
Okay, you can't see the nubs. Like it slithers. You'd have to pick it up and investigate. In fact, some snakes actually will have. I'm pretty sure there are kinds of snakes that have little tiny nubs.
Sorry, Mom. You don't have to listen to the rest of this. She will literally have a heart attack hearing the word snake. Like, literally have a heart attack.
If you're ever playing with Unati's mum, it's very important that during or before the session zero, you need to clarify, it's a hell no. Till the no, no, no. Beautiful. Well, that was... I enjoyed talking about that. I think... I personally really vote for session zeros. I think they work. I think they fulfill the purpose of avoiding issues further down the line. They don't have to be super long. They don't have to be, you know, they don't have to go on for ages. You can even do a session zero and then take a little break and jump straight into a session one. I think that's also potentially fine. But yeah, I think I would err on the side of doing them and yeah, hopefully that's clarified or that's helped some people in an idea of what you might do with them, I guess. Oh, actually, one last thing before I forget to throw this out there, which is that someone on our Discord said that there was one of the issues with generally starting campaigns is that people don't know the length and people might not want to commit for so long. And therefore that might create tension down the line, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
One of the things that I thought of at the time was if you come up with, if you could bring it, put in place more kind of like big milestones within your campaign that kind of act as like potential jumping off points for characters, like a very easy way for your character to go, okay, cool. I'm going to, I can jump off here. Like, my character's going to leave for a bit and maybe come back at a later date if my life's getting a bit busy. And then that way your players don't have to feel awkward about potentially saying, hey, can I just, like, not do it for a few months because I've got this work thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even just a general, this is going to be a short campaign. This campaign's going to last roughly the summer. This campaign, whatever.
Yeah.
Just having, even that, I think, could be a useful indicator, even if you don't know how many sessions necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Well... thank you very much. I hope this has been a helpful little thing for you. And I hope you enjoy running your session zeros.
Yeah.
But we will see you next week, I guess, because that's what we do. It's every week.
Yeah.
I love it. So long.
Shy folks.
So long, shy folks.
Bye.
So long.
Bye.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's definitely a cat in my house.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.